Welkom bij de podcast Expat to Repat, je weer thuis voelen in Nederland, waarin ik, Mirjam de Bakker, jou aan de hand van mijn eigen ervaringen en de verhalen van andere repats meeneem in hoe het is om weer terug te verhuizen naar je thuisland. Voor sommigen is het alsof je nooit bent weg geweest. Je pakt je favoriete vintage winterjas achteruit de kast en hij past nog precies. Maar voor velen is met name de eerste periode lastiger dan je van tevoren had bedacht. Want in de tijd dat je weg was, is Nederland veranderd, ben jij veranderd en dus voel je je misschien niet meteen weer helemaal thuis hier. Verwarrend, want je komt hier toch vandaan, dus waar ligt het dan aan? En veel belangrijker, wat kun je doen om je snel weer thuis te voelen, om je plek weer te vinden, zodat jouw terug naar Nederland reis sneller en fijner verloopt dan de mijne. Welkom, dear listeners, lieve luisteraar. Vandaag gaan we door in het Engels. Dus als je dat niet leuk vindt, dan zit je bij de verkeerde podcast. Today I am very happy to have Veerle Bele da Costa David in the podcast. Veerle is a certified travel and life coach. She is a seasoned expat, a repat and traveler. And after a successful career as immigration lawyer, she transitioned to coaching. And she draws upon her personal experiences of traveling and living abroad, supports her clients on their inner and outer journeys to find belonging, connection and purpose, and to feel at home no matter where they are. And I think that is a very beautiful sentence to start a podcast with, right? Because I think everyone wants to feel at home and it shouldn't matter where on this beautiful planet you are. So welcome, Veerle.
Yes, thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah, it's so nice. We were just chatting a bit about how we met, and we actually met online in an international network. So that's how these things go. And yeah, I'm very happy that she's here and that she's going to share her journey with us. The first question I have is that I never heard of the term travel coach. Life coach, yes, but travel coach, not so much. So please, can you explain what is a travel coach and what is it you do?
Yes, sure. It's a quite a new term, travel coach. I started my travel coaching journey about 3 years ago. And when I started, it was really brand new. Like, I was one of the first people actually doing the certification to become a travel coach at that time. So it's quite a new concept still. And travel coaches focus on different things. Like, it's all related to travel. But for example, I focus on helping people who move abroad, who have lived abroad and moved back, for example, like the repats. But there are also other travel coaches who, for example, focus on solo travel and helping someone, create that solo trip, look at their intention and then help them to build their confidence to make it happen. But also when they return back from that trip, for example. And there are also other travel coaches who focus on family travel. How can you travel with young kids, for example? So it's very diverse, but it's all linked to how can you integrate the component of travel into coaching, and how can you use travel for your personal growth, for your well-being? So all of those aspects, actually.
I think any form of travel changes you for the better. It gives you so many new experiences. So I can imagine that that it's helpful to actually use that in the rest of your life and to integrate that and not just see it as a beautiful intermezzo, but actually, you know, take away things from the travel that you've done.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And whether it's like a short trip or long-term travel or actually moving somewhere new, it really has an impact on you. And that's also why I liked to combine the travel coaching with the life coaching, because after a while I also realized, yeah, it's like your whole life is impacted by travel. It's not just the trip, but it's really that combination that I really like about it as well.
Well, you know, having been an expat yourself and a repat now and a traveler, it kind of makes sense. So let's delve a little bit more into your personal journey. The first question I always ask is, at one point in time, you decided to leave the Netherlands. So for you, when was that and why was that?
Yes, the first time when I moved abroad, I was 20. So I was still quite young when I embarked on my first adventure. And that's when I moved to Spain, to Barcelona, for my studies. I was studying law at the time. and I could go on this exchange program, Erasmus. And I had the chance to move to Spain for a year, and I could go to different countries in Europe, but I was like, oh, I really want to learn Spanish as well. So, and Barcelona sounded like, you know, a nice sunny destination. So that's how I ended up there.
Yeah. It's a great city.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
we still have friends there. I love it. Actually, it has nothing to do with this, but my son is now studying at Erasmus.
Oh, nice.
He's studying two things, but being one of them. And we were actually looking at exchange to Barcelona. So it's kind of, okay, I need to ask you more questions later.
Yeah.
Nice. So how long you stayed there for just an exchange at that time then?
Yeah, that was 1 year. And then I had to move back to the Netherlands to finish my studies. So that was for my master's degree. Yeah. So the first year was in Spain. And then the second year, I had to finish that in the Netherlands to graduate.
And did you catch a travel bug when you were in Barcelona? Did it make you feel like, oh, I need to do this again?
Yes. Especially when I moved back to the Netherlands, I really felt like, oh, I wish I could just stay in Barcelona. It was so tough to get back into that sort of life that I had before when I was just studying. And I didn't realize that so much before, but then during that year in Barcelona, I had such a great time, and I really felt like that I just felt like more confident in myself, and really that feeling of, okay, I can do this. I can literally move by myself to another place and create a life there and meet new people. And it was really a boost. I really felt more alive. So I think that really helped with my travel bug. Yeah.
So after that, even just being gone for 1 year and studying, when you came back, it was already you have to kind of adapt again to the Dutch way of life. Was it easy for you?
Yes, I really had to adapt. And especially the first months, it was not easy at all. Because in Spain, I was really used to this spontaneous lifestyle of basically every night I would just go out for like a drink with friends or to the beach, or there was always something happening. And when I moved back, I had to really study a lot again. And I was just in my room. And during the week, there was not so much happening. Maybe a dinner with friends. But I mean, if you compare, I was studying in Nijmegen. If you compare that with a city like Barcelona, it's just a different vibe, right? It's different things are going on, so to say. And for me, it just felt a bit boring at that time. And I had to write my thesis. So it was also a lot of, studying and just focusing on myself. So it was such a contrast from that sort of buzzing life that I was living in Barcelona with so much going on. And also
more freedom as well, because apart from the studying, you're not tied to all the things at home that you feel you have to do. There's less obligations. It's more about what suits you at that point in time.
Yeah, exactly. And also the more spontaneous mindset. So it was really like last minute, oh, let's go somewhere. And when I moved back to the Netherlands, it was more planned. And that's something actually
is planned here.
Yeah, that's what I'm still currently struggling with nowadays. But I already noticed that when I moved back after my first move, that everything is so scheduled and it always feels so busy, you know, those type of things.
I think it's the number one thing every single repat I've talked to over the years has said. It's the scheduling and the planning is just insane here. I do think it's a little bit better when the sun is out. People tend to have a little more like, oh, you know, let's not stay home and do this and this and this. Let's enjoy the weather. Let's go out. So I do think that in a lot of more of southern countries, or you know, countries that have a more light in their lives, it's easier to be spontaneous because you have more energy and you're more positive, I think, when the sun is shining.
Yes, I completely agree. Yeah. I also noticed it. And I was always one of those people who said, like, I don't want to be impacted by the weather. You know, I want to just be happy and energized, whatever type of weather. But it doesn't really work like that. Like, the sun really helps. And it just makes you feel like you want to go out more and do more stuff. So I think it's also really linked to that. Yeah,
it is. Yeah. I'm known to being very grumpy during winter. And especially now it's almost April and I still haven't seen the sun more than two times this year. So I think that's really rubbish. But okay, that's the weather. Okay, so you came back and you finished your studies. And was it already in the back of your mind that you know, I'm going to really seek out an opportunity to move abroad again?
Yes, it was. Like, it was in the back of my mind, but I also felt the pressure to look for a job because I studied for 5 years and it was like, okay, now I have my diploma. So the next thing I have to do is find a job. I was really sort of still in that mindset of like following the steps, you know, the standard steps. You study, you get your diploma.
And law is a country bound thing, I think, as well, right?
Yeah, well, I studied international law. So in that sense, I had a bit more of a global perspective already during my studies. But I always felt like I want to travel more. It's just really part of who I am. Travel has always been an important part of my life and what makes me feel alive. Yeah. So in the back of my mind, while I was looking for jobs and sort of trying to, you know, start my professional career, I always felt like, oh, I wish I could do that again. That experience that I had in Barcelona, if I can just move abroad again someday, that would be really great. Yeah.
And did you make that happen? Did it happen?
It did. It did happen twice more. So the first time afterwards, I moved to Cambodia. That was just for a few months. I got an invitation to do an internship there with the United Nations at the tribunal there.
Yeah.
And it was a very intense experience, especially the work. But it was also completely different than, for example, my experience in Spain. I remember that I had this culture shock as well when I arrived there because it was a very last minute thing. So I didn't really prepare myself and I just felt, yay, another adventure. Let's go for it. So when I arrived there, I was like, oh, wow, this is really different. I really have to adjust and find my way here. But that also helps you. So looking back, I'm very grateful for that experience, but it was definitely not the easiest when I was there.
No, it has a lot of beauty, but it also has a lot of complex issues going on in the country. Yeah,
exactly. And then my third move was a few years after. So after my experience in Cambodia, I did a little solo trip to Thailand. But then afterwards, I sort of felt that pressure again from like my career, like, okay, no, now I have to really move back to the Netherlands and start working full time. And that's what I did. Like I started in the corporate world, started working. But then after a few years, this travel bug became very loud again. And I was like, oh, no, it's the Netherlands just feels too small for me. I really want to go on another adventure and not just, you know, count my vacation days and travel as much as I can during those days, but really go on a bigger adventure and move somewhere new if I have the chance. But on the other hand, I also enjoyed my career. So I really liked working with expats. That was what I was doing as an immigration lawyer.
Yeah.
So I was helping people with their visa processes.
Okay.
So I didn't really want to give that up, but I also felt like I cannot stay in the Netherlands.
No.
So eventually I found the perfect combination at the time. I was assigned from the company I was working for to Australia.
Oh.
And that's how I moved to Sydney. Yeah.
That I envy you because that's one of the places I wanted to move to. It didn't happen. But yeah, Australia is awesome.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And I was supposed to just move there for 6 months and then move back to the Netherlands again to the same job, take everything that I've learned, you know, my whole experience and go back to that job. But 6 months go by so fast and
Is it enough?
No. I felt like after a few months, I was finally adjusting and building, you know, my life. Yeah. And then I was like, no, 6 months is too short. I don't want to move back. And during that time, I also met my now husband. So that also played a role. And eventually I had the chance to actually stay longer. So I quit my job in the Netherlands and just went on a local contract.
Yeah.
And I stayed for 3 years, first in Sydney, and then I moved to Melbourne as well.
Okay. That also, because 6 months or 3 months is nice, but I think a couple of years gives you the opportunity to really, you know, delve into the country and the culture and enjoy and experience life in a different way than if you're just there short term.
True. Yes. Because it takes a few months to adjust. Yeah. And it depends on how different the countries that you move to or how much experience you already have with moving to different places. But still, you do need some time to adjust to a new environment. And yeah. if you just stay for a few months, then you sort of finally find your flow and then you have to leave again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I feel that my experience in Australia was definitely the best one looking back because I also had more time. And if the pandemic hadn't happened, I would probably still be in Australia right now. So, yeah.
So many people actually have had to come back or came back because of the pandemic.
Yeah,
I think it was a major shift worldwide of people moving back home for various reasons because of the pandemic. Yeah,
definitely.
Would you have stayed otherwise, you think? Would you have stayed indefinitely in Australia?
I mean, definitely is always a hard question because I feel like you never know what happens in life. But
intention to stay.
Yeah, my vision was really to stay at least a couple of years more and just go from there, see how I liked it. But it definitely felt too short when I had to leave.
Yeah.
Especially also because I switched cities. So first I lived in Sydney for about 1.5 years. Then I got a promotion. And with that job, I had to move to Melbourne. So then
yeah, so you weren't done yet. No,
I was still discovering another new city. Yeah. And then suddenly the pandemic happened.
Yeah. So, okay. So you had to come back. Did that also mean that you came back to the Netherlands without a job and without a plan? Or did you kind of figure out that you wanted a career change? What happened then?
Yeah. So I was, as I mentioned before, I was working with expats in Australia. And of course, when the borders shut down, there were no expats coming in anymore. And I lost my job and my visa and my partner's visa. They were both linked to my job. So we also both lost our visas. And we just got the news that within 2 weeks, we had to pack our bags and leave.
Yeah, that's also Australia. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was in the middle of the pandemic. So we weren't even allowed to say goodbye to friends. And we just had to put all of our stuff in a container because we couldn't even give it away if we wanted to or sell it or whatever. It was just like, okay, let's just hire one of those companies. They came into our place, put everything in boxes and put it in a container to ship it overseas. And we just left with two suitcases completely in shock. And yeah, we didn't want to leave at all.
And but that's that. Then you're going to a grieving process. It's not even moving back. It's like, it's really saying goodbye and being ripped away from everything that is dear to you at that time.
Yes, definitely. It really felt like my life just fell apart at that moment. I was really, it was almost like a heartbreak. You just feel like something is ripped away from you. And I remember when I walked at the airport towards the gate to check in, everything was closed. So it was like really like a ghost town. It was a very strange situation.
Eerie.
And someone just, the lady who checked my passport, she told me like, oh, have a good trip. And I just started crying. And I was like, no, I don't even want to leave. You know, it was, I still remember that moment because I just felt so sad. And Yeah, I was like, I don't know what to do with my life because I don't even want to move back to the Netherlands. But we figured out that it would be the easiest place to move to because we both didn't need a visa. My husband
didn't have any time to prepare. So it was like, okay, let's go to a place I know probably.
Yeah, and also a place where we didn't need a visa because my husband is Portuguese. So we were like, okay, let's just go to Europe for a moment.
And why not Portugal then?
Well, it made the most sense at that time to spend a few months in the Netherlands. We could stay with family and just have sort of a base to start with. Yeah. But we thought it will just be for a few months and then we move back or we move somewhere else. But of course, the pandemic took much longer.
Yeah.
So that's actually how we sort of started to build our life here in the Netherlands. And that's why I'm still here at the moment. Yeah.
But it must have been hard for you. So you come back and okay, you have family here, but you know, as we just established, you were in shock because it wasn't a decision that was made by you and your husband. It was just, thank you, now go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So did you have time to grieve and to process all that or?
Yeah. In the beginning, I was in complete shock. So I didn't even realize that I had to process something in a way. I didn't even know myself anymore. I was really like sort of in a bubble that I felt like, what am I doing here? What is my next step in life? I didn't have a job, but I also didn't feel like, oh, I want to go back into an office job again after everything that happened. I didn't have motivation at all. Then there were the lockdowns, so it wasn't not even that I could just catch up with friends.
No.
So it was such a strange situation. So my partner and I just stuck together and we were both going through this grieving process. So at least we had each other. Mm. But the first few months, I was just crying every day, just having this very unhealthy lifestyle that didn't really fit with who I was, like drinking and eating unhealthy and not exercising. I was just really in this...
My heart breaks for you. And, yeah. You know, it must have been so, so difficult.
Yeah, it was. And every time I've shared this story now, like sometimes I share about it, right? Like, for example, in this podcast. But every time I share it, I still feel the emotions, even though it has been a couple of years. But it was such a shock. And it really took a while to process it. And what you mentioned, it's really a grieving process.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
And even if you come back willingly and even if you planned it all, reverse culture shock is real. And it is a process that you go through. And sometimes it's easier than other times, depending on a lot of factors like where you were, how long you've been away, so many things that influence it. And some people, luckily, they just come back and glide back into their old life and they're, you know, totally fine. But yeah, it is something that you're not really aware of what's going to hit you when you go back, because that's not what you think about. You think about the practical side. You think about, oh yeah, you know, I can take my bicycle again and I can see my friends and family. And luckily, you focus on the positives, but you don't realize that, that you've changed so much yourself.
Yeah.
So no matter what the reason is, you come back, you're not the same person.
Yeah, that was another thing that I was struggling with. So I had the grieving process of leaving Australia, but then I also had the process of building a new life in the Netherlands again and really figuring out who I was in this new chapter of my life. And what you mentioned, you have changed as well throughout the years. So I also noticed that people responded to me differently, like people who had known me for years, they would sometimes tell me like, oh, you've changed. And then I started doubting myself because I felt that was a good thing. I was like, oh, I feel like, you know, I built my confidence and I had all these experiences abroad. It really made me a stronger person. But then when you hear those type of comments, you start doubting yourself and you're like, oh, isn't that a good thing that I've changed, you know? And I'm still the same person, but I just built my skills. So all those type of situations also didn't really help with the reverse culture shock and the whole process of adjusting again.
So when was a moment for you that you realized, okay, I'm getting there. I'm starting to, you know, see the new path that I want to follow.
It was about 6 months, I would say, after I arrived in the Netherlands that I was like, okay, now it's done. I'm done with this victim mode. I really have to get back on track and get back control over my life because I cannot continue like this. And that's also when I started to really focus more on my personal growth and really started diving deep into, okay, how can I process all these emotions and really think about the next step in my life? So I started focusing on like coaching and Reiki and journaling, meditation, whatever. Like I tried it all, like all the tools that I could find to help me feel better again. And that's when I started to make this shift, that slowly I started to feel better and I started to feel like, okay, this is a chapter that I didn't wish that happened to me, but it did happen and I cannot turn back the time. I can only take lessons from the past and, you know, use it for my future. And of course, it's okay to grieve, but at a certain moment, I was like, I also need to move on and find a way.
It's not helping you in the long run.
No, exactly. No. So that's when this shift started. And then after a few months, I came across this program to become a travel coach. And that's actually how I found my motivation back. And I got this inspiration to start my own business.
Yeah.
And that's
kind of
sort
clicked
of,
for you, right?
Yeah, it clicked. Yeah. And that's how I sort of found my spark and be like, okay, there's something new that I can work on that feels exciting to me. And that sort of, got me out of that funk that I was in. Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned Reiki as well. I was trained by Elaine Grundy, a fantastic Reiki master in Singapore.
Oh, nice.
And I'm not a Reiki master, but I'm a level two, whoever knows about that. But I feel that it has helped me to stay grounded, and it has helped me heal in many ways over the years. Not very consciously. It's not like every day I'm like, oh, yay, I'm going to Reiki myself. But being able to and using it as a tool has really helped me with my inner strength, I would say.
Yeah, it also helped me with that. And yeah. I still use it. Also, I sometimes combine it with my coaching if someone is open to that.
Oh, and wow, that's so good.
Yeah. It's because it is a beautiful tool and it can really help you to process things or to build your inner strength. So it's definitely, a really nice tool to have in your pocket.
Yeah, it also helps to let go of things that don't suit you on various levels. Yeah, absolutely. So that's how the travel and life coaching came about. So actually, you've got best of both worlds because you found something that really, makes you spark and makes you think this is what I need to do now. And you can still keep in touch with the expat adventurous side of life because you coach a lot of international clients, I think.
Yeah, true. And that's what I love about it as well, that I can also enjoy sort of their adventures through the coaching with me, because it's really rewarding when I, for example, help someone move abroad or go on this amazing trip. And of course they do it, but I was there like supporting them, and it's really cool to see other people doing those things as well, and have some sort of contribution into that. So
In your mind you probably travel with them and you're like, oh, you're just excited for them, but you also know what they might experience and how you can help them navigate through that.
Exactly. And I wished I had someone like that when I was going through those challenges. So that's how I started as well, based on my own experiences, that I was like, oh, I never found someone who could help me with that. Most of the support out there is focused on the practical stuff. Yeah. And also what I had been doing before, like the visa procedure. Yeah. It's an important part of your move, but there's much more than just the practical support. So that's what I like about the work that I do, that I can help people more on like the emotional, mental part. And
I think in general, luckily, people realize more and more that the mental and the emotional well-being part of any journey is incredibly important.
Yeah.
Because you also take yourself with you whenever you move abroad. So as much as it is an adventure, character things or issues you might have here, you will also eventually have there. So you still need to work on that, I guess. I need support to deal with all that.
It is. And sometimes we think, oh, if we just move somewhere new, we can escape some things that we're struggling with. I also thought that when I moved to Australia, for example, at that time I was also going through a heartbreak and I was like, oh, I'm moving to the other side of the world, don't have to deal with that anymore.
Yeah.
But as you said, you always take yourself with you.
Yeah.
So eventually it comes up. Maybe you have some distractions in the beginning, when you have this adrenaline of settling into a new place, but sooner or later, things that you have been carrying with you will show up and you have to process them anyways. Yeah.
Yeah. And the same goes when you move back to your home country, sometimes getting back to a situation that you've known from your youth, people that you've always, known for a long time, can also trigger issues that are, that you buried, that you didn't necessarily have to deal with abroad, but it comes like rushing back and that's when you need to deal with them, I think.
True. Yes. Yeah. It's often a mirror.
Yeah.
When those situations happen. Yeah. And I've experienced that as well since I'm back in the Netherlands, that you meet people again from like years ago and they sort of have a certain vision of you from the last time they saw you, but you have grown and changed in the meantime. So yeah. Sometimes there's this disconnect that you feel with those people.
Yeah, because it's I always compare it to like moving back into your parents' home when you've lived on your own as an adult. You know, it's lovely to be with them, but you can't abide to the same rules that they always had because you're not a child anymore. And it's a little bit the same, I think, when you move back home, you know you've changed. And as you said in the beginning, you know, you're like, I'm this confident woman. I know how to do stuff. I can actually build a life anywhere in the world. But I'm back and all of a sudden I feel insecure and I feel like I don't measure up to the image other people have of me. And that can really play tricks on your mind and on your well-being.
It really does, yeah. And also when I started this business journey, I felt like old fears were coming up as well that I hadn't experienced abroad. And I was like, has this something to do with the country or is this me or what is going on? But it's definitely those old memories that show up again and that can trigger something inside of you.
Yeah, true. Ah, I think it's a beautiful thing, what you do and what you offer.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's funny. We do have some overlap. Corinne and I, we give trainings that are reboarding trainings. So we focus more on the practical side, I would guess. There's coaching involved, but it's more about, okay, making people aware of the feelings you have now are part of a process, are part of coming back home, are part of the reverse culture shock. And we really want to help people navigate through that easy and quicker than what we both experienced, because that's not just, it's not necessary, but it starts with being aware of what is going on and which steps you can take to navigate through that. And it's nice because in our network, we also have a certain amount of coaches that if you have other issues that pop up, we can, gently nudge you in the direction of somebody who can take care of that piece of coaching.
Yeah, that's the beautiful thing about coaching as well. Like everyone has their own specialty and it's really like, what are you working on? Who is the best person to help you with that?
Yeah.
But sometimes it's really knowing that there's support out there and that you can also ask for help and that you don't have to figure it out by yourself, because that's a trap that I have been in.
Yeah, we're not good at that.
No.
No.
No. And it almost also realizing that it's normal that you feel those things, because sometimes you can really start doubting yourself and that you're like, oh, it can really feel like you're the only one who is struggling with this. Yeah. And when I was in that bubble that I shared before, I really felt like that. I was like, why am I being so difficult? Why am I making this so complicated for myself?
Yeah.
And once you start connecting with other people, you realize, okay, I'm not the only one going through this. So that's why I also love this podcast, for example, that you share those stories, because when people listen to it, they also realize, oh yes, there are more people, even though it's not exactly the same story, like you have things in common that you can relate to and realize, oh, I'm not the only one who finds this hard and who is having troubles adjusting or experiencing this reverse culture shock, for example.
Well, that's why I started it, the podcast. And what is really warming my heart is that I do get on a regular basis people that email me or find me on LinkedIn and just say, it was so good for me to actually listen to a couple of episodes of different people, different experiences. And it made me feel like I'm not the only one and there is support out there. And that just helped them, you know, get through it a little bit easier. So that, for me, that's the whole reason that I started it. I think what we missed, what I missed, and why I'm actually turned this into a business, is what we are used to having expats. Is when you come to a new place, you always find other expats, and they're like, "Hey, you're new, you know? Can I help you? Can I, you know? Do you want to join me for a coffee? Do you want to come here? Do you want?" People are just welcoming because they recognize a fellow expat, and they know I've been through it. I know exactly, you know, what to do in this situation in this country, and I'll help you. But when you come back, you're expected to just fit in, and there's nobody saying, "Hey, welcome back. Can I help you? Can I explain to you what changed in the Netherlands in the past X years?" So that makes it doubly difficult because you just don't know who to ask for help. Because your Dutch friends, they love you, but they won't be able to help you through this.
True, and you also think, okay, I'm Dutch, so I should know the system. Mm-hmm. At least that was what I was thinking, like, okay, yeah, I should be able to figure this out because I've lived here before. Mm-hmm. But things do change, and I really felt like an expat myself in a way. So in the beginning, I would also go to expat meetups, for example. I was like, I want to meet other international people here who have also just moved, because I didn't feel that sort of Dutch in a way, which was also strange. I was sort of ignoring a part of myself in the beginning, and I wanted to stay in that feeling of being an expat because I had enjoyed it so much. And I was like, oh, I just want to hang out with expats and hear from their experiences, and it can help me to adjust here. But eventually I also had to realize, okay, but I'm also Dutch, so there's also part of me that is still in sort of that identity. So sort of finding that balance between like the expat mindset and then like sort of my previous life in a way before I moved. It was definitely a struggle, especially in the beginning. Yeah. And sometimes I still have that feeling with certain things that I feel like I've changed, and it just doesn't really fit anymore with like the typically Dutch things, so to say.
I recognize that feeling. I think for myself, I allow myself to be both. So I have my repat friends and expat friends abroad as well, in Italy, in Spain, in the UK. And I keep in touch with them because those are valuable friendships that I don't want to give up, and that give me my sense of expatty. And when I'm there, I'm always more confident. I'm always a different person when I'm with them, because they just know that me. Mm-hmm. And I also allow myself to actually really have roots now in the place I live, and to really build a community here, and to really get to know a lot of people, and not just go through the motions, but to really invest time to forge friendships. And it takes time, because a lot of people already have their social circle here in wherever you live in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
So it's not very easy to break into those circles. But I did realize that putting the energy in has to come from me, because I'm the one that came back. I'm the one that has to readjust. But I allow myself to have both.
Yes.
And that works.
I agree with that. That's also what I've been trying to do. And also to meet new people, not just go back to the friendships that I had before my move.
Not
but
new.
Also to meet new people, get some new like inspiration, start new friendships also with Dutch people. And what you said, it can sometimes be harder to get into a group, but I also feel like it's easier to connect with Dutch people who, for example, also have moved abroad and are back and share that experience. And
repats are the best, I tell you.
It's easier to connect, I think, because they're also more open to new friendships.
And you don't have to explain, they understand, so that's easier.
Definitely.
So you also shared with me, and I'll share that in the show notes as well, but a very, very inspiring ebook that you wrote.
Yes, it's
can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes, it's a guide to feel at home away from home. So I put some exercises and tools in there that people can use to reflect on, basically first on where they have been. So looking back on the past few years and realizing how far you have come, because you cannot look forward if you don't know sort of where you've come from. So really reflecting on, okay, what were my goals a few years back? What did I accomplish? But also, what are the challenges that I overcame? And then the second step is to looking at where are you right now? Like, what does your life look like right now? What does energize you, or what drains your energy? And what is like your current status, basically? And then the last part of the guide is to look into the future. Like, what is your vision? Now that you know where you're at, where would you like to go? And which steps can you take towards that? And that can literally be like, where would you like to go if you want to travel or move?
Yeah.
But it can be more in general as well, like in your life, like what is your vision? What do you hope to accomplish in the next few years? And just really reflecting on that. So I put some like fun, simple tools in there that people can just use themselves, like a bit of self-coaching in a way.
I'm actually going to fill it out, I decided, because I think it's always interesting when you get a question like that. What is it that comes up? What is it that pops up in your mind? And to write that down, sometimes you surprise yourself, like, oh, I hadn't realized that this is something that I want to do. So yeah. I always find it very insightful. And sometimes
it's really a simple question. And then once you start answering it, it's like, oh, I actually never thought of it like this. Or no. What you mentioned, like once you start writing, something pops up and you feel, oh, this is actually very interesting. It's something I haven't thought about. But now that I wrote this down and I see it on paper, this is something that I really would like to achieve. Or yeah, that makes sense. So yeah.
Well, I think, yeah, that's why I wanted you to explain. I think it's wonderful that you're sharing that, because I think, if you're listening to this podcast right now, you might, you know, not even finish listening. You might just want to go to the show notes and download the guide that Verla made for you. So I will share that. And I do hope a lot of people will find insightful information in there and reflect. And they then also will know where to find you.
Yes, I also put it in the guide. So there's a few links, so it's easy to just download that and, for example, find my website. But just to mention it here as well, you can basically find me on almost all social media channels. Instagram, my name there is Unpack by Veer. My website is also unpackbyveer.com. And on LinkedIn, you can also connect with me just with my name, Veerle Beelen da Costa da Veer.
Yeah. So it's a beautiful name, by the way.
Yeah, like the last part is the last name of my husband.
Yeah, but Veerle is really Dutch
I
as
know,
a name.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's very exotic, very nice.
Yeah, it gives it a more of an exotic twist because, I can share a whole podcast about the struggles with my name abroad, but it's always a challenge in English or in when I lived in Spain. I always changed my name because people just couldn't pronounce Ille, and because it's such a combination of letters
sounds,
and sounds.
The R L E, So, what name do you go by when you're abroad?
Usually, Fear? It's V.
V.
Yeah,
okay.
It's just easy in English. Most colleagues in Australia, for example, would just literally email me with like, hey, V.
Oh, that's actually quite handy.
Yeah.
Next to X, you can start your own V. How do you call that? Platform.
Yeah. And now in my business, I made it shorter to Veer. And somehow it's also easier for people to pronounce.
Veer,
So that's also interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I like your name. Mine is very, very Dutch and very unassuming. But I like my name, so it's fine.
Yeah, I got used to it. There was a while that I was like, oh, why do I have this name? No one can pronounce it. And, you know, I was getting frustrated. But now I also accepted it and was like, well, it's fine. People can try. And if they don't pronounce it exactly how it is.
Well, at least they remember you, like the girl with the name I can't pronounce. I must say we have a son, and when we decided on what to name him, we were living abroad. He was born in Pakistan when we lived there, and I did try out a lot of Dutch names, what they would sound like in English, and we did reject a couple of names because of that, because I was like, poor kid, you know, you don't want to grow up abroad and have a name that really nobody can pronounce, so that sounds like offensive when you say it in another language. So there was a lot of no.
It's nice that you thought about that, because it might make his life easier in the future.
Exactly. I want to thank you for this conversation. I don't really have any questions at this point, but if you have something you want to share, then of course you're very welcome to.
I think we covered quite a lot, actually, my expat journeys, my move back to the Netherlands, what I do and all of that combined. So it was really a lovely conversation. I really liked the questions you asked me. And I hope it's useful for the listeners, and that they feel some part that they can relate to and that can help them in their journey, whatever phase they are in right now. Like if they just move back or thinking about another move or whatever it is, right? Whichever challenge. yeah, I think for me as well, it's always helpful to hear stories from other people. And what we said before, knowing that you're not alone, it can yeah. feel as inspiration and empowerment, but also as like sort of a soothing feeling that you're like, okay, yeah, there are more people out there.
With exactly. There is a community out there. You just have to find them.
Exactly.
I always say that the biggest gift for me is this podcast, because I started it to help others and to share stories. But every single time, there's so many new insights for me as well. And it's just so nice that people are actually willing to open up and share their stories. So yeah, really, thank you.
Thank you as well.
That you wanted to be on the podcast. And I think we'll just share all the information in the show notes. And hopefully people will love your inspirational story, and they know now where to find you if they feel like they can work with you and you can help them in their journey.
Yes, great. Yeah, you can always contact me. The links are in the show notes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Veerle, and have
thank
a wonderful
so much
day.
As well. My pleasure.
Okay, dear listeners, lieve luisteraar. Dit was hem weer voor deze keer. Zoals ik net al uitgelegd heb, vind je alles over Veerle ook in de show notes. Thank you for listening. This is the first in a series of podcasts that I will do in English. Because it's just something I like to do, so why not? Thank you very much for listening, and talk to you next time.